You're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. Thanks so much for sharing your now with us here. You. Do you have any regrets? I hope not. I hope that you're doing what you want to do. I know I am. I know I'm blessed to be in the studio here. Just drove in on some beautiful, pristine, fresh gravel. Mahalo to whoever it was who laid that down. It's beautiful. It's impeccable. I can't wait to see what you do with the carpet in the studio. Thanks again to Els and Schutz. A fantastic show. We're going to shift gears here. We're blessed at this radio station that we have not only all these amazing music volunteers, but people like me and Felicia and Jimmy and the Songs of Sovereignty crew and the Analeo Hawaiian Issues and Pets and People in Paradise. And we're going to be talking about some stuff, probably a little bit, kind of building on a theme from earlier today, propaganda. We're going to explore a little bit about what propaganda means to you and to me in 2016 in the age of, I don't know what you call this now, but stick around. We'll come back with Out of the Box. Tune into your questions, your feelings, your thoughts, your heart's desires, and what's going on in your world.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
This is Ron Whaley, KKCR, Honolulu. And KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio.
Well, my heart's beating like a hammer, and I'll bet yours is too. Thanks so much for tuning in to KKCR Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. And thanks so much for your support over the years. We've got another pledge drive coming up. We're looking for new members. If you are loving what you're hearing, but you've never experienced the pleasure of supporting the station financially with a contribution of any level, your opportunity is coming up soon. Not only could you go to kkcr.org and click on the donate button, you could get ready for the pledge drive, the fund drive, the fun drive, the membership drive. So stoked to have you guys support what we do, and we're so happy to send back the love to you. We want to thank also Kalaheo Chiropractic and Ching Young Village, because they just like listeners like you, do a lot to help not only KKCR survive, but to thrive. We've been around for 17 years now, and we're going places, and we're happy that you are powering us there. So thanks to these underwriters.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
That's right. So no matter where you are or what you're doing, you've got it tuned to Out of the Box every Thursday in this time zone from 4 to 6 p.m. and wherever it is you are around the world now. This is a show filled with people's opinions, thoughts, feelings, and perspectives. Whatever you say, you should stand behind.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. And if you are finishing up your workday here and you're getting ready for Pauhana, the end of workday, and you want to jump in your truck and pick up your board and go for where the waves are, here is your surf report. This is as of 7 o'clock this morning, so updated today. So conditions may have shifted a little bit, but here's how they were this morning. Haena, 10 to 18 feet. Visibility fair. Hanalei, 8 to 14 feet. Kealia, 1 to 4, looked pretty flat to me. Lydgate, 1 to 3, was pretty flat this morning when I checked it out. Poipu, they say, is 1 to 4. Salt Pond, 1 to 4. And Kekaha, 4 to 7 feet. So if you're looking for some moderately big waves, go try out Westside. If you like the big stuff and you're ready to get hammered by some barrels, the North Shore is for you. If you're from Iowa and you've never seen waves this big, ho! Stand well clear of the shore. The waves are big. They're amazingly powerful. And what can happen every, I don't know, 5-6 minutes or so is something called a set. And the set waves are typically twice as big as the other waves you see. So if you think you're standing at the edge of the ocean and you're in a safe place, bear in mind that a wave could come by, a series, a couple, two or three waves, could be twice as big as the rest of the waves, and they could literally eat you. They will ground you into the sand, and you'll be very unhappy if you're even alive. So it's a serious thing. You don't need to be afraid of the ocean, but you absolutely need to respect it. And respect is the thing an ocean can teach. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing your day. The phone lines are open. 808-826-7771 is the number here in the studio. It's just after 4 p.m. here in the center of the Pacific, Thursday, Hawaii time. But if you're south of us in Kiribati, it's the same time tomorrow. It's Friday already. It's 10 p.m. on the eastern coast. So you folks tuning in from Rochester, New York, or Bethel, Maine, hey, good evening. Hope, I'm glad you're still up and still listening. It's already midnight in Reykjavik and Sao Paulo. It's midday in Australia and Japan, so konnichiwa to folks listening from Tokyo. And we got even somebody from Shanghai and China, so welcome to Kauai Community Radio. It's sunrise on the Caspian Sea, and it's right now everywhere. We've got a caller calling in. If I do believe, it's the good Dr. Strangelove. Aloha, caller. You are on the air.
Why, thank you. Thank you, Jonathan.
Aloha. How are you doing today?
Well, since the topic you suggested was propaganda,
yes,
I thought I'd give a quick shout-out to three historical references which might be interesting in terms of your topic. The first would be from Mr. Vladimir Lenin, who said...
He knew a thing or two, yeah?
A lie told often enough be counted as the truth.
Is that true?
Well, you can make your own judgment.
How many times did he say it?
How many times did he say it?
Yeah, because, I mean, if he said it enough times, then maybe it's true.
Well, he was just stating a sort of a
truism.
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, it sounds like a truism.
Well, the main thing is, you know, obviously when you're in charge of the organs of communication, like the, if you own all the press, the press coverage and the radio and TV, like in our friend in North Korea.
Sure, Kim Jong-un.
Like, in terms of like April Fool's tomorrow, somebody has been putting on the internet and then they put it out, of course, as the truth, and they totally believe it, that Kim Jong-un is the most handsome and well-dressed man in the world.
I think he's kind of a good-looking guy, and it is already tomorrow, today, in Korea.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they're having a good April kind. But anyway, the second reference would be to, of course, Mr. Hitler.
Mm.
And in his book, Mein Kampf, which means my struggle, he said that, like, the average person will tell, like, little white lies in their life, but they will never, most people will never really tell, have the guts to tell the big one.
Sure, like a big, ginormous whopper.
Yeah, see, that's why we can tell the big lie, in other words, in terms of what I said a couple of weeks ago or so, that, you know, he had the insight, well, instead of just calling the Jews Jews, and we don't like the Jews, even though he was half Jewish.
I know, isn't that ironic?
There's a lot. I mean, of course, Mr. Hitler was a vegetarian. He loved animals. He loved children. And if you ever really have the courage, you should look at his paintings.
Mm.
Now, the thing that kills me.
Are they better than Bush's?
A million times.
Oh, well, you know, it's a shame that his career in art wasn't
fostered. The thing is, like, when he applied to the Viennese Art Academy, whatever, they noticed, well, he didn't have too many people in, you know, he just had, like, landscapes and cityscapes. And, you know, I must say his paintings weren't all that bad.
Yeah, but they weren't that great either.
No, they weren't tremendous, but the point, I mean, he ain't no Da Vinci, right?
Yeah, but maybe he should have stuck with that.
I wish he did.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he said we can say, like, for example, the Jews were not just Jews, we don't like the Jews, but they're Bolsheviks and they're communists. Well,
and not only that, he described them as Untermenschen, which means subhumans. They're not even real people. So,
He was following sort of H.G. Wells, some of H.G. Wells' concepts, and he was looking for some what they call Lebensraum, living space.
Right, the realm of living.
And he didn't care too much about, you know, attacking England and France because they're from the same tribal background, the Celtics. But the thing is,
he wanted peace.
He wanted
a piece of Czechoslovakia. He wanted a piece of
the
Poland.
He wanted the land in the east.
Yeah.
To generate, you know, food and all that jazz.
Right, right.
But anyway, and then of course the last example, and then I'll leave you, sir, is there was a gentleman who I will now tell you about. He put out the rumor that that Wellington had lost the battle with Napoleon.
Mm-hmm. The Waterloo, and, is that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
You're very learned, sir. And that he would, then, of course, he cornered the stock market because it wasn't really true. Do you see? That's how Mr. Rothschild, Baron von Rothschild, got all his bucks.
So he told a lie that made him a million. Yeah, but he didn't do it just for like fun, like, oh, I'll see if I can fool people. He did it to make money.
That's right. That's the basis of his fortune. I think is it Jay Gould or no, what is the guy?
Stephen Jay Gould or
not one of the robber barons. He sold a huge number of defective rifles to the Union Army.
Ooh.
And Supreme Court said, you got to pay for it. You know, the United States has got to pay for it. We don't care if they're defective or not. A contract's a contract.
Wow.
But that wasn't propaganda. That was a contractual. But, yeah, it's like, isn't it an amazing silly season, sir?
You're talking about the politics in America?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, you have a lovely, lovely show, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. And I want to thank you on behalf of all the listeners for your bravery and your consistency in calling in over duration. You said a fine example to
listener. I just find, since I know a little bit about history, and I have a great deal of book learning, I just find it helps to, touch stone with, to some of the past events, and then we might be able to go from there.
Right. Well, it would be a shame to, flush it down the toilet. So thank you for making use of that education.
Well, thanks for your great show, Jonathan. Bye-bye.
So, on the note of propaganda, since our esteemed friend just brought this up, I have a little quote here from Aldous Huxley, whom you may know from Brave New World. He wrote another book a few years later called Brave New World Revisited. And in this Brave New World was sort of a fictional account of a technocratic dystopia where people were medicated into zombiehood and were very obedient and kind of a big fat downer. But Brave New World Revisited goes into some of the principles and social scenarios that he was trying to explore. This is sort of a behind-the-scenes book, and it's really all about propaganda and information systems and the challenges that we face as a society. So here we are, Chapter 6, if my Roman numerals serve me correctly. This is The Arts of Selling. Again, this is Aldous Huxley, 1958, Brave New World Revisited. The survival of democracy depends on the ability of large numbers of people to make realistic choices in the light of adequate information. A dictatorship, on the other hand, maintains itself by censoring or distorting these facts and appealing not to reason, not to enlightened self-interest, but to passion and prejudice, the powerful hidden forces, as Mr. Hitler called them, present in the unconscious depths of every human mind. In the West, democratic principles are proclaimed, and many able and conscientious publicists, the media, do their best to supply electors, that's us, the voters, with adequate information and to persuade them by rational argument to make realistic choices in the light of solid information. All of this is, generally considered to be greatly to the good. But unfortunately, propaganda in the Western democracies, and above all in America, and he was writing this in 1958, has two faces and a divided personality, a kind of schizophrenia. In charge of the editorial department, there's often a democratic Dr. Jekyll, a propagandist, and he uses that term broadly, like anyone who is putting information out, not in sort of the pejorative, because all information is propaganda. What I'm telling you right now is propaganda, but to the best of my knowledge and ability, it's accurate and factual. He continues, a propagandist would be very happy to prove that John Dewey had been right about the ability of human nature to respond to truth and reason. But this worthy man only controls part of the machinery of mass communication. In charge of advertising, over on the business side, we find an anti-democratic because anti-rational Mr. Hyde, or rather Dr. Hyde, for Hyde is now a PhD in psychology and has a master's degree as well in the social sciences. This Dr. Hyde would be very unhappy indeed if everybody always lived up to John Dewey's faith in human nature. Truth and reason are Jekyll's affair, not his. Hyde is a motivation analyst, and his business is to study human weaknesses and failings and to investigate those unconscious desires and fears by which so much of men's and women's conscious thinking and overt doing is determined, the way we make choices. And he does this not in the spirit of the moralist who would like to make people better, and that's a dangerous path, but or of the physician who would like to improve their health, but simply in order to find out the best way to take advantage of their ignorance and to exploit their irrationality for the pecuniary benefit of his employers, i.e. to make money, because it's just business. After all, it may be argued, capitalism is dead, and consumerism is king, and consumerism requires the services of expert salesmen versed in all the arts, including the more insidious arts of persuasion. Under a free enterprise system, commercial propaganda by any and every means is absolutely indispensable. But the indispensable is not necessarily desirable. What is demonstrably good in the sphere of economics may be far from good for men and women as voters or even as human beings. And I'll leave Aldous Huxley's Brave New World revisited at that and continue on to say, or every living thing on the entire planet. So if you're into the irrational prejudice and xenophobic kookery, if you want to have your buttons pushed, then Mr. Trump with his stubby vulgarian fingers will be happy to do that. I read an interesting article that a friend recommended to me about Mr. Trump, and it was by one of the heads of a early Trump PAC, a political action committee that was acting on his behalf in the beginning of the whole Republican primary hoo-ha. And she said that they were only hoping to get 10 or 15% of the vote, and they were only thinking they could last 6 months or so. But they misunderestimated the irrational prejudice, fear, and outrage of the American people, who know at a fundamental level that things are not right in their country. They just don't know why. So he's been able to push buttons and I think have kind of a fun time. Nobody expected him to be as quote unquote successful as he has been. But then again, look who he was running against. Over on the Democratic side, you have Hillary Rodham Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And if anyone has any comments about any of that, the phone lines, again, they are wide open. 826-7771. Again, that's area code 808-826-7771. In the meantime, I'll tell you a little story. Last week, if you may recall, it rained super hard. Friday, it was like a deluge. It was really coming down thick like that. And over on the east side, where I live in the Wailua homesteads and the Wailua River shed, oh, it's a big area, and lots of rain came down, and it all piled up into the river. And typically, how it works with the Wailua River, there's a sandbar that forms across the mouth, because usually the flow is pretty low. So the river could not empty into the ocean. It was all plugged up. But this wall of water came down with trees and all kinds of debris, and it gave that big sandbar like a gigantic enema and burst it all out. And if you have been by in the last week or so, the river mouth is so wide open and the sands are so plowed away. Waves are actually coming up the river, up below the bridges. And if you are by the beach at the Lydgate side, you may have noticed that there are some large pohaku, or black basalt rocks, in the river mouth. And on some of those rocks are some ki'i pohaku, some petroglyphs. And normally they're buried by sand, but for now, and the short while until the sands cover them up again, they are visible. These are unknown hundreds of years old. Such a beautiful thing. I got to check him out this morning. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha. Well, on the subject of propaganda, I just watched a really interesting movie last night. I think it was from 2014, and it's called Merchants of Doubt.
Merchants of Doubt, as opposed to Merchants of Death.
Yeah, Merchants of Doubt. And it's about how the big tobacco companies, for 50 years, they knew that tobacco caused cancer, and for 50 years, they hired all kinds of science, you know, they fake, phony scientists, guys, and everything. They said, well, we don't really need to dispute the science. We just need to cast doubt.
Right.
And so that's what they're all about. And so they're, all their papers and all their stuff got subpoenaed, and the government put it, you know, has it stored. And then because it's a pub, you know, it's you can get it through the Freedom of Information Act.
Yes, FOIA, Freedom of Information.
All their playbook. And this was a lot about the climate change deniers.
Sure.
Took their playbook and just used it and figure out how. So they hire all these people to go on, you know, Fox News or whatever. And it's interesting because these same people keep appearing over and over.
Yeah, because
that churn the stuff out.
Yeah, because they have skill sets in not stirring the pot, but muddying the waters. And they're professional disinformationists.
Exactly. It's a really interesting movie to see how they do it. And they even talk to these people at these firms.
What do they say for themselves?
They're just totally up front. They go, well, we don't even look at the science stuff. What we do is we just want to cast doubt on it. We just want to, you know, they're just totally, like this one guy, he's totally up front about everything. He says, oh, yeah, I write those emails to guys, you know, like scientists that say that, you know, climate scientists that especially the pioneer ones that
sure.
say, hey, something's going on here.
Well, and this, you know, people are still arguing about it today for, you know, I don't really know why, but this stuff started coming out in the 70s.
But these guys, they're arguing about it because these guys are putting it, they're controlling the narrative.
Yeah.
And they have the same thing for, I'm sure, for the pesticide, you know, whole thing, too. The same thing. Those guys are using that playbook, too.
Right, and they do it for two reasons. One, because they're making billions of dollars, just like the tobacco companies, and just like the lead industry before them. I saw a documentary on lead as a result of the whole situation going on in Flint. And and the lead industry, people knew back in the like early 1900s that lead was toxic, especially to children who were developing. It's like a neurotoxin. And they did exactly the same thing. They're like, oh, we need more information. Oh, these studies aren't conclusive. Oh, you know, we're not certain. Da da da.
Yeah, same thing with the asbestos business.
Same thing with everything. They do it for two reasons. One, because it makes billions of dollars, and then the other thing is because it's so effective. I mean, you just get a consultant and you pay him a couple hundred thousand bucks, and he lets your business continue on for five or six more decades with amazing profits, in spite of the fact that it's a massive social ill.
Yes. So it's a really interesting movie, you know, documentary that kind of really picks it all apart and shows how it all works. And it's just amazing.
Merchants of Doubt.
Merchants of Doubt. Yeah, check it out.
Well, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'd urge anybody to like check it out if they want to see how that thing works, because
it's simple.
Yeah, I got it from Netflix.
Yeah, but you know what you're saying is this pattern. It's so simple, it's so clear, and it's so effective because we just don't pay attention enough. Like things are too chaotic, things are too busy. People are scrambling around trying to put food on their families. They don't have time to stop and analyze this and that and everything.
Well, that's right, and people and the news.
The so-called news
just sucks it up, whatever is said, and they don't know. Nobody does investigative journalism anymore to find out, hey, who are these guys that are saying that?
Well,
where do they come from, and who's paying them?
It's expensive to do real investigation. It takes time, and you need a team of people to do that. And instead of paying, you know, competent individuals, you could just, you know what, put up photos of women with wet tank tops and create clickbait and, you know, have the latest quote from Herr Trump. And, you know, it's just silliness. But it doesn't matter. It's just it triggers a response in people. And the media, people forget, it's a business. Their job is to attract eyeballs for their advertisers, for the commercial speech. And they're trying to persuade you to purchase something or to buy a product or a service or to take a little purple pill or whatever the case may be. They're not neutral. They're making money from it.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, that's why community radio is so essential. and so vital and so critical for the health of a community. I mean, that you have access to our community's airwaves to bring up an important documentary called Merchants of Doubt that kind of breaks it down and gives a concrete step-by-step example of how the monkey show works, that's priceless.
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah, doing a good job, Jonathan. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you calling in, and I look forward to your support coming up on the next Pledge Drive.
Oh, will do.
You guys are awesome.
Okay, thanks. Aloha.
Aloha. Phone lines are open, 808-826-7771. It's your opportunity to use your airwaves to speak to your community live and uncensored. All you got to do is be polite and use, you know, commonly acceptable language, none of the crazy F-letter words or anything like that. And it doesn't matter if you agree or disagree with me. That's not my job. I'm not a gatekeeper. I'm more like an air traffic controller, and as long as you've got your plane under control, I'm happy to let you land. We got another caller coming in. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Thanks so much for tuning in to KKCR, and welcome to Out of the Box. Are you there? Oh, sorry, sorry. Now you're there.
What? Hello?
Yes, now you're live.
Okay, I'm Charlie Brown, and I think today's session has started out on people's blindness or overwhelming, and I'd like to add the second law of thermodynamics to it.
Oh, how does that factor in?
Because I think it's just a blind spot that science gradually built up around it, and some famous people in the beginning thought they saw theological reasons to support the second law.
Oh, well, I mean, it does sort of seem to hold true in the aggregate, but to the extent that I'm familiar with some of your work, it's not always true. It's episodically bouncing around kind of a balance, yeah?
Yeah, on a microscopic scale, heat is no longer a fluid like the previous theory was, but it's a kinetic thing with the molecules or colloids moving around randomly and disjointedly, even though the temperature is nominally the same for everything.
Yeah, but that's like an aggregate average, yeah? The individual molecules all are at different energy states, right?
Yeah. And the sum is the same. They just exchange. But so there can be a temperature difference develops among these little states if people or machines can figure out where they are and use them.
Yeah, at what scale does that difference emerge, though? That's the trick.
Well, technology has crept up, so we quickly jump many orders of magnitude in scale. We have switches in the nanometer size. And so we should just see if we can use this for heat, especially since it's a simple thing to sort thing in either the electricity going forward or going backward if using an electricity sorting device. But the main gist to be the payoff is that this device would be the opposite of a stove, which takes heat and makes food hot. Instead, it would make food cold and make electricity, and that's basically simpler and more elegant. But the second law of thermodynamics is the way, and it says you can't do it, just because Newton said that if you have a rod from a fireplace to the room, the heat will go from the fireplace to the room and not the other way. But if you have these little devices that can sort out the aggregate and make it go the opposite way, then it will, and you'll build up diversity from nothing.
So this is the diversity that exists in a non-homogeneous state of all the different molecules and all the different energy levels, and they're sort of bouncing around like ping pong balls, but some are moving faster and some are moving slower and some are spinning around rapidly and some are less so. And so if you took an average reading of all of them, you would get a certain energy level, but each individual member of that population has some divergence. It's higher or lower, more or less.
Yeah, just like if you had one coin in cost, it would come out of heads or tails. But if you have a box full of coins, the average will be very close to 50% heads if they're true coins.
Right. So I first started hearing about your nanotechnology energy generation device scheme, I guess maybe like 10 years ago, because I was listening to KKCR, and I heard you call into Carlos's show back in the day. And, you know, that was like 2004 or 2005 or 6. And here we are. Here we are. It's 2016. And what has happened in the last 10 years? What successes have you had? Or have you been able to identify the challenges that you're having a hard time getting past? Where is this project?
I might just be kind of weaseling along and looking at easy paths of development, but not yet triggering it off. And I am trying to find people if they'll help without taking over, because this goes into another part of what we talked today about, the vested interest wanting to cheaply extend their reign regardless of the morality.
Sure.
They'd be sold and so on.
Their profitability model. For folks just tuning in, I'm speaking with Charlie Brown, who's I guess, what would you describe yourself as? I think of you sort of as a conceptual tinkerer.
Well, I'm a second law wannabe, or an anti-second law wannabe.
Yeah, but you have a technical background, so maybe you could just quickly explain what that is to people.
Well, it's mostly just pursuing the thought. My father was an electrical engineer. He's a civilian radar technician in the Navy in the 40s, and they finally figured out how thermal electrical noise fit into the circuits in the 40s, and then they kind of classified it because it was a war, so it became obscure. But I'm using instead of having atoms bounce around, I'm having electrons bounce around, because you can control them in solid state devices like diodes.
And then the upshot of all of this investigation turns out to be essentially a free energy device.
Yes, it turns heat into electricity, heat in the absolute sense. So it'll make something colder and make electricity having this. So you're not gaining or losing energy, because perpetual motion device people promptly go for the over unity devices usually, and they skip the case where it's exact balance.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting. To me, I don't have the technical understanding that you have, but I see it sort of as surfing. You know, the total energy state of the ocean, I'm sure, adds up to a net aggregate zero, but it's bouncing around, and if you're in the right place at the right time, you can jump on a wave as it comes by, and if you paddle, you can get into it, and then you're continually falling with it, and you're accelerating. The power of the wave is moving you along, but actually the water's not even moving.
Yeah, it's an amazing sport, and the people get very spiritual from the having the ocean race them along.
Well, it's a beautiful thing to be embraced by rolling water. I mean, you know, wow. So if folks want to get a hold of you to further your idea, I mean, you know, it's 2016, and there's the Internet, and there's Kickstarter, and there's all different kinds of ways that people such as yourself, who have like intriguing ideas that are maybe overlooked or in the corner of the laboratory of our minds, you know, there's opportunities for you to hook up. So how can people get a hold of you? Do you have email?
Well, first, I guess the phone is good enough. I've gotten kind of shaky about all the email and all the spam and all that. So just 631-0846 is my number.
631-0846.
Yeah, and let's see. Oh, and better than Kickstarter, because you have to clear a minimum hurdle on Kickstarter. You don't get the money as IGO, I think it is.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm sure there's all different kinds of models out there. Kickstarter is just one. That's the beauty of the Internet. You have an idea, you can get it out there. People all over the world can check it out. Just like people all over the world are listening to KKCR and the interview right now with Charlie Brown.
Okay, in that case, my area code is 808.
There you go. So, Charlie Brown, thanks so much for calling in, and I wish you the best of luck as you continue to noodle along. I mean, sometimes life gets in the way. Sometimes life gets in the way, and you know, it's hard to make progress on your projects. It's hard to make continual progress, but I'm excited to see what may come of your ideas here.
Yeah, and I don't know, for the financial community, remember that if it's too good to be true, it's not true. It's getting in my way, too. If people think, oh, dear, it's perpetual motion and stay away from it, then that's been an impediment to this, too.
Well, I would think that if you just start in the beginning, say, this is not perpetual motion. This is surfing off of the episodic, the episodic high-energy moments.
Maybe, but I also think it probably is balanced accounting of energy.
Oh, okay.
Right? Not created or destroyed.
All right. Well, that sounds great.
Well, thank you then.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for listening to KKCR. I know you've been listening to KKCR for as long as I've been on the island, so that's awesome. I don't know how long you've been a member of the station, but thank you so much for listening and calling in and the support you've given over the years. It really does make a difference.
Okay, the station that loves.
That's true.
Bye-bye.
All right, aloha, Charlie.
Thank you.
That was Charlie Brown. He's a theoretical high-energy nanotechnologist who has a pretty interesting idea about how to make a free energy device by skimming off of the episodic imbalances. We've got another caller calling in. But before we take this call, I'm going to run this.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
Yeah, we really do listen because it really does matter, and this really is a community radio station, and you are the you in community radio. Okay, we got our next caller coming in. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Are you still there, caller?
Hello.
Aloha. Thanks for joining us. You're live on KKCR.
Let me turn down my radio, Jonathan. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
And my radio isn't too loud right now, right?
It sounds great. What is on your heart?
And on the subject issue
of... Or what is on your mind? Yeah.
And I'm walking away from our radio so I can just talk and listen to you responding. You brought up Aldous Huxley,
mm-hmm.
Brave New World, and Brave New World Revisited. In my youth, I've read his literature. And I don't know if this has, but similar to him in the same circa period, there was an author from France, Jean-Paul Sartre.
Oh, yeah, okay. S-A-R-T-E.
Existential idealism type of person, or basically I'd say almost that real being and nothingness.
Right, I remember...
I don't know if... I mean, it inspired me in my younger days. I'm not young anymore, obviously.
Oh, you were about a sapling.
Just the mindset that I was inspired with from what I read of him, just the mindset that I incurred was very positive in relation to understanding a lot of things in general. And I didn't know if my mentioning of the author's name and would, if you could elaborate, if it does fit into your topic of propaganda. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But I just wanted to say that, and that's about all I had to say. Okay?
That's great. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate that. All right. So he's posited the question, and I'll reiterate it to you, the listener, Jean-Paul Sartre, French philosopher. if you're familiar with his work, his writing, which I confess I am only familiar with in passing, how does it strike you? What I'd like if the caller who just called, if you could call back, you said you were inspired by the mindset of understanding things generally. If you could give a specific concrete example of what that might be. But in the meantime, I'm going to type in Jean-Paul Sartre. Sartre, okay. Jean-Paul. Okay, Jean-Paul. Charles Armand Sartre was a French philosopher, playwright, novelist, political activist, biographer, and literary critic. We've got some callers calling in. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. For the moment, we're talking about Jean-Paul Sartre.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Sure.
Aloha.
Did you have a comment?
Not at this time, thanks.
Okay, we'll go to the next caller. That's great. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Jonathan?
We're doing the heavy hitters today.
Jean-Paul Sartre... just briefly, was an existentialist.
So now, hold on, before you go too far, what in the world is existentialism? I love the way it sounds in my mouth. It's got a lot of syllables, but what does it mean?
Let's just go back, you know, for a long time, the political structure or the church or a religious ideology said, now, the meaning of life is this. And then, especially in this last, well, in the 1900s, in the 20th century, people said, now, wait a second. No, I think you have it a little bit backwards. We have to live, and then out of our living, perhaps values and priorities and the meaning of life will become... Well, be suggested, the meaning of life is this, thus saith Buddha or Jesus or the church or the Whig Party or
the Whig Party.
So existentialism, basically says you must exist first, you must live, and then, you know, then you will can approach the, you know, the meaning of life and all these other heavy questions. Now,
through lived experience and
I just wanted to say, yeah, to that gentleman, Mr. Sartre said, hell is other people.
That's interesting. What do you understand?
Well,
I'll
just make it brief.
Sure.
He wrote a play called No Exit, and in the play, you find like an innkeeper, a prostitute, a mayor of the city, some normal people.
Oh, just like Kauai, sounds like.
Exactly, exactly. Like any podunk place in the world, you name it, from Iraq to, yeah. So the whole thing is just the average folks, and they're in this room, and then pretty soon, after a while, they figure out, oh, this is hell. We're never getting out. We're all stuck in this together.
Hmm.
But I find that there's different types of existentialism. There's like people who are Christian or religious existentialists. It's like a rocket taking off or a couple rockets taking off from the same base. They take off from the same base, philosophical base, but they don't end up in the same place. And so it's just like there was a cat by the name of Søren Kierkegaard, and he looked into his heart and soul, and he was studying to be a Bible jockey, but basically a minister, and he was a serious student, of course. And so he realized, now wait a second, you know, if I, you know, he was in love with this lady, and he realized that, no, it's just best like to just cut to the chase, just to not be involved with her, not get married, because he realized, you know, the anxiety and dread that life does entail. And so,
you know, but that's really only part of the picture. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
You know, dread and anxiety, they certainly exist, but that's not the whole story.
Oh, I'm not saying that's my point of view.
Oh, okay.
I know I'm saying this is what Søren Kierkegaard, and so he, you know, he just broke off relations with this lady, and so there's different schools of existentialism, but basically it's just like saying we must exist first, and then out of our existence then will emerge values, priorities, and maybe an understanding of the meaning of life. In my own case, I tend to be an optimist, and I had a chance when I was living in London to see the etchings of William Blake.
Oh, huh? Yeah,
who was a visionary.
There's an interesting cat.
I mean, there's so many interesting cats. It's like amazing. The life of the mind is a wonderful thing, and there's so much information. But yeah, so William Blake said, "Catch the joy as it flies."
Yeah, I like that.
And so the whole thing is just as, you know, I used to surf, and it's just, you know, I try to explain to people, like, when you drop down at a very oblique angle, all of a sudden this wave is pitching over you, and you can see the mountains through the translucent wave, and you're going down at a huge angle, and somehow usually you make it out okay. It's like, whoa. So it's a transcendent experience. And,
yeah.
But I just wanted to make a comment, and then I'll leave you, sir. The thing is, in sales, you must give the person a reason to buy. That doesn't
sure.
have to be the correct reason.
No, not at all. It doesn't matter.
And see, like, for example, when they started to tool up to these giant-sized SUVs, they hired a psychiatrist who said that people really, when they go out in the world, they're fearful of other people.
Right, they want to be bigger. They want to be taller.
Right,
they want to be surrounded by safety.
The car folks to make these gigantic, monstrous cars, which I just love not. That's why I never ride my bike on the road.
Yeah, well, you know, riding your bicycle could be amazing. Like almost no other place. Here in Kauai, this is one of the like most supreme places to ever ride a bike, but there's all these cars out there. I almost rode my bike to the studio today.
Wow.
But you know what? My housemate said, "Wow, Jonathan, you know what? I don't feel safe with you riding your bike home at night. Would you please borrow the car?" I was like, well, she had a point.
Well, see, in the old days when I was working before in Niki, on our day off, we'd ride, I live South Shore, we would ride through the Holland Mountain and this Cane Hall Tunnel to Lihue, and then we'd come back at night with our lights on. But this was like, you know, on the Cane Hall roads. But after Cane went down, of course, it's an entirely different situation.
Yeah, so it was like beautiful, open, pure freedom, bicycle love.
Well, like in your case, I mean, I 1 year lived Kapaa back in '88, and I came to the island in '85, and I remember taking a little tourist car from the North Shore almost all the way to the South Shore on that power line road that goes from the North Shore.
Oh, really? The backcountry.
In back of Wailua.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, to me, each year it gets more humbug, more restrictive, you know, so all the cane roads, you know, people were very, very friendly and kind, and so they didn't care if you're, you know, riding your bike on the cane, you know, if we saw a truck, of course, we're going to get out of the way. Or a motorcycle, I mean, you know, and
sure.
You have to have some sense. But the whole thing is like, yeah, I just, I really miss the old days in terms of the access to the island. And, but yeah, this, to look into, see, philosophia means love of wisdom. And we have so much information today, but we don't have too much wisdom.
Yeah, that's a shame, huh? Well,
and,
you know, people, complain a lot, but what are you going to do about it?
Well, you know, I think that, like Eleanor Roosevelt said, small minds are concerned with other people, but great minds are concerned with, you know, great ideas, just like Mr. Charlie Brown. You know, when you consider the, you know, the great minds like Einstein, etc., when you see what they opened up in terms of our understanding of the phenomena and of all that is, especially at the level of the quanta. I mean, that's the thing I'm really into these days, quanta and astrophysics.
Well, it's a beautiful world out there.
And thank you for your beautiful show, Jonathan.
And thank you for calling in and sharing your part of the beautiful world. We're going to take a break and do some station business. Listen to a little Doors.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
You're listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. You've got it tuned in to Out of the Box on KKCR, the station that loves you. And this show is brought to you in part by listeners just like you, along with these fine, fine people at Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, and Compassionate Care. Check them.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO-free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Kevin Bako, MD of Hawaii Compassionate Care, offers medical marijuana certification exams at his office in Kapa'a. Information and appointments available at 808-854-6335 or online at hawaiicompassionatecare.com.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right. And thanks again to Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, and Compassionate Care. We've got some events coming up I wanted to let you know about. Let's see. You like pancakes? I do.
It's that time again. The Kauai North Shore Lions Club is having its annual Hot Cakes and Hula breakfast on Sunday, April 3rd from 7 a.m. until 11 a.m. at the Hanalei Elementary School. Breakfast includes live entertainment, lucky number drawings, and a silent auction. Breakfast takeouts are available. Lions Club members will be selling tickets in front of Kilauea Bakery and Big Save Hanalei from March 30th through April 2nd from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. Tickets also available at the door or by calling 808-482-0413. This is a major North Shore Lions Club fundraiser, and proceeds are used for North Shore youth scholarships.
And, yeah, so that's a pretty exciting thing. And then here's another opportunity for you to plug in to the community, and not just the community at large, but your community radio station.
Aloha, KKCR Ohana. Kauai Community Radio is constantly evolving. In January, we will begin the 2016 KKCR Strategic Plan, and you are invited. In a series of public meetings, group discussions, collaborative workshops, and awesome station parties, we will review and rededicate ourselves to the future of Kauai Community Radio. Please get involved in the future of your radio station by emailing strategicplan@kkcr.org and stay tuned for more updates about the KKCR strategic plan and mahalo for your participation.
Yeah, without you, there's no you in the community radio. So, hey, check them out. I think KKCR has been on the air now for about 17 years, coming up on two decades. I think maybe in August, the station will turn 18. And so, for the very first time ever, KKCR will be old enough to vote. What do you guys want us to do in the upcoming election? If you've been paying attention in the last year or so, you may have noticed that we now have the ability to go out into the community and do live broadcasts pretty easily. Are there things that you'd want us to do? Do you want us to hold a political forum and have the candidates on the air? What kind of questions would you like to ask them? Together, you and me and all the volunteers at KKCR, we can create a political forum and we can have the candidates answer the questions that you present to them. That's just one idea out of many, many, many that we could accomplish. We simply have to decide what we want to do and make a choice. So your opportunity to help shape the direction of the station, to help chart out a course for where you'd like to see us go, send your email to strategicplan@kkcr.org. We had a meeting last month about ideas and goals and objectives for the station about where we want to go in the next 20 years. And this is your opportunity to plug in. If you want to be involved in these kinds of meetings, we're going to have another one in about, probably about a week or two. We'll get that on the air as soon as we get a facility reserved for that. Could be the Kapaa Library. Send in your email, your ideas, your passion, what motivates you, what inspires you about KKCR, and where you'd like to see us go. Because there's a lot of ideas, and many of them are wonderful. And the question is, what will you do to help make it so? We've got a caller calling in right now. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Thanks so much for listening to KKCR, and welcome to Out of the Box. What is on your heart or mind? Are you there, caller? There we go. Now you're on the air. Aloha, caller. Thanks for calling in. 826-7771. You're live on Out of the Box. Oh, they waited too long. All right. I apologize. I didn't press the right button to call back. Somebody's calling right now. I think it's going to work this time. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, it might have been me the whole time. I don't know.
Well, determination produces results, so congratulations.
All right. I'm kind of calling. It's an interesting topic of propaganda. I don't know if that falls in line with today's newspaper, The Garden Island, about the study about the bacteria not from human sources. I don't know if you've seen today's newspaper.
I have not, but please illuminate me, and maybe there's someone else who didn't look at The Garden Island today as well. What struck you?
Well, what struck me immediately about it is that they're trying to say that they prove that it isn't coming from human sources, and they kind of, it feels like they're trying to discredit Surf Rider Foundation for insinuating it was human sources. But they don't deny that it is very bacteria laden. But they say things that are very obfuscation. A spin comes into my mind.
Well, let me ask
as
you.
I read through it.
Let me ask you. Who is the they who is saying that? You identified Surf Rider. I'm familiar with them. I know that they have a program
by Jessica Ells.
Yeah. Well, Surf Rider, just for folks who don't know, is a local volunteer organization here on the island and around America as well, I guess. Mostly West Coast, I think. But I know here on Kauai, they have, for several years now, they do regular and systematic bacteria load testing of all the different streams and bays around the island. And so typically the bacteria levels are off the charts, like way, way higher than is healthy to be swimming in. But who was responding with obfuscation about their reports?
Well, let me just read the first paragraph. It says, there are high levels of bacteria in the Mahalapu Valley Waiopili stream, but there's no proof it's coming from human sources.
So
the way that's kind of phrased is maybe, well, there's no proof it's not coming from human sources either.
Well, and
nobody has presented any proof one way or another.
Right.
But you know, Hennessy hops on it and says, see, look, that's what we were telling you the whole time. You know, it's plainly stated with scientific testing and everything like that. It's like, but they didn't really say anything.
Well, what leaps out to me about what you just read is nobody disputes that there are incredibly high and extremely unhealthy levels of bacteria in the water. They're arguing about where it came from, but nobody's denying that the streams are polluted. And that seems like that's actually the salient issue there. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I don't think Surf Rider was trying to say that it was necessarily coming from human sources, just that it's bacterial that comes from waste of some kind, you know, from animals or from contaminated soil or from humans. But then they're kind of differentiating that humans aren't animals. I mean,
well, that's also laughable right there.
Yeah. So anyway, just going through the article, I thought we were having some federal guys who were going to come over and test the water, but these are the state people from Oahu coming over.
This Department of Health, DOH?
And I don't know, is there a federal guy coming over here to check it? I hope so, anyway, because what they're saying, you know, is like, oh, you know, if you're checking here, yeah, there's a lot of high bacteria, but we're going to go check around the rest of Poipu area and see what it's like in those other streams. And there's no conclusion about anything in here. They go on, you know, with Surf Rider talking about, you know, a little bit more specific about what they want to see happen over there. And then Bridget Hammerquist comes and says some good things about it, too, but there's nothing of any that you can get your teeth into, you know. It's just all lightweight propaganda, I guess you'd say, coming from these guys. And but Amy Hammerquist, no, yeah, Amy Hennessy it is.
And who is Amy Hennessy?
Hawaiian Dairy Farmers.
Oh, okay.
And, takes it to validate, oh, see, there's nothing wrong with our area at all. It wasn't any fault of ours.
Well,
everything looks good for us.
There's no evidence to support that conclusion, and the listener should be well aware that she's not just a person commenting on this out of the goodness of her heart. She's the paid spokesman for a for-profit business that can only do business if the data supports their position.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, she says this data will help support their voluntary environmental impact statement and the dairy's future plans.
Yeah, so I mean, she's the paid spokesman for a for-profit industrial endeavor, and you know, let the data show that people who have a dog in the fight like she does are not credible sources of information.
Right.
They will spin it so their pockets get lined. That's just human nature. I don't know her at all. I'm not saying she's a bad person. I'm saying she's a person, and that's what we do.
Right, and some people just take it as their job, and they don't even know any better, perhaps, you know. And they're just, our job is to support our company or our idea or whatever it is.
Because that's what they get paid to do.
Push that forward, whether you really have any knowledge about what you're talking about or not.
Well, Will Rogers.
Sometimes you can just be a good talker.
Sure. I think it was Will Rogers, but sometimes I get my cowboy philosopher poets confusiated. I believe he said that it's the hardest thing in the world to get someone to understand what they're paid not to understand.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, I wanted to get that out there. It just came out today, and I was hoping when I saw that other article in the paper 3-4 days ago that we were going to get somebody that would really go up there and give some more numbers about what they found, you know, collaborating Surf Riders numbers that they're coming up with there, because they just discredit Surf Rider by saying, you know, they're not using the proper protocol or the improper labels on their bottles, and so all of their research and effort that they put into it can be just totally ignored.
Yeah, well, that's crazy talk.
These guys show up and they don't corroborate anything or make any new discoveries, or they just, yeah, there's high over there, and we're going to go look around in Kaloa and see what else is going on, and just seems like whitewashing over the whole thing.
Well, as one of the earlier callers pointed out in the show when he was talking about a documentary about the tobacco industry called Merchants of Doubt.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, that, you know, it's their business to create confusion and uncertainty so that they can conduct their business and make money. So they're sowing doubt and uncertainty to maintain their profit model.
Yeah, and that's as a job, I'm sure it's a very highly paid job as well, if you can present yourself to a corporation or a company who needs somebody of that talent.
Sure.
To where you could do that. As a matter of fact, it reminds me of the guest they had on the other day. They were talking when we had Gary Hoosier was on the show.
Yeah.
He was trying to fit that role, whether later he could sell himself as being one of those people or not.
Yeah, I heard that show. I heard that show too.
Conversation. Well, maybe we should have done it this way, you know, instead of that way, and you know. Stir up a little doubt with everybody.
Yeah,
it was very effective.
I heard that show, and the whole time I'm thinking, like, wow, who does this guy work for? Whose payroll is he on? Whose media consultant, public relations strategist is he? Like, who are his clients? It was just amazing because, like, why would anybody care so much unless they had a dog in the fight?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's a quirk of personality that's developed through college debate teams or something like that, to be put on the side that you're not really on, but having to defend it.
Yeah.
Taking that on is an art form, I suppose.
Yeah.
Defend the undefendable.
I think that that's it's called being the devil's advocate. But my question is, why would anyone ever want to advocate for the devil? I just don't get it.
Money.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for calling in, caller. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. Phone lines are open, 826-7771. That's area code 808. And I want to read another segment here. This is from Edward Abbey. He's famously the author of The Monkey Wrench Gang. But he wrote a bunch of other stuff, and I had never read his work before. But here's a little essay from, oh, gosh, let's see. It's called Science with a Human Face. And it is, let's see, it's page 224, and there we go, 1979. This is from a book called Abbey's Road. This is Edward Abbey, Science with a Human Face. Science with a human face. Is such a thing possible anymore? We live in a time when technology and technologists seemed determined to make the Earth unfit to live upon. According to C.P. Snow, scientists are happy in their work, especially when contrasted with poets or novelists or artists or philosophers, all those customarily lumped together in the category of humanities. The humanitarians, the name connotes a self-mocking futility, reflecting accurately the trend and tempo of the age. But I want to ask Mr. Snow this question. Sir Charles, I love how Edward Abbey gets all intimate with C.P. Snow. Sir Charles, sir, if the scientists, technicians, researchers, whatever you wish to call them, are so happy in their work and so pleased with the world they are creating, why are they also, at the same time, so earnestly devising ever more efficient ways to blow it all to hell? That's a pretty good question, huh? You are listening to Out of the Box. I'm your host this afternoon, Jonathan Jay. Coming up at 6 is going to be Evolve with Dove. At 8 is going to be Slim on the Mystery Train. and then bringing us into the morning hours, welcoming us into tomorrow, is the Commodore with Locomoco. And these are all fantastic shows. We are so blessed to have people like this who volunteer to make these amazing music shows, to share their passion for music with you. You never know what you're going to hear on KKCR, and you never know who's going to call in next. Caller, you're on the air. All right, the phone lines are open. You can be that caller at 808-826-7771. Phone lines are open. This morning, I'm hooked up with a friend of mine, and he gave me this amazing calendar. It's the Kalana Mahina for 2016. And this is put out by Kai Aula Anahola and the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. Kai Aula Anahola is dedicated to utilizing the Hawaiian language for diverse marine source curricula, teaching people about the ocean. The goal is to provide job skills and career guidance as a means to better prepare and encourage opio, which is youth, kids, for work in marine science, ocean resource management, and other related careers where they can incorporate both Western academic education and native traditional knowledge. For more information about Kai Aula Anahola, you can contact Kamealoha Hanahana Smith. And here's his email, kamealohahanohanosmith@hotmail.com. I'm not going to spell that for you because it's a lot of letters, but look up Kai Aula Anahola. And this calendar, it's amazing. I'll tell you all about it right after this caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Aloha, John. It's Al from Kaloa.
Oh, hey, aloha, Al. Please call me Jonathan.
Oh, Jonathan. Excuse me. I turned on the radio here. Jonathan, I'm so sorry.
No, that's quite okay.
You've really opened up a lot of topics here today.
I know. We're all over the map, huh?
Yeah. And
Kierkegaard.
Is that Jim Morrison cruising through the background occasionally?
It was there. Yeah, I wanted to play the No One Gets Out of Here Alive. I thought that was apropos, talking about Sartre and existentialism.
Totally apropos, because...
that's a French word, by the way.
Yeah, what does it mean?
Appropriate.
Appropriate.
Yeah, it's appropriate with a silent S. Those French, you know, they just got to be French.
Yeah. Well, as far as Jim Morrison goes, I just finished reading that book. I took it out of the library on Kaloa here about 10 days ago.
What's the book called?
The one you just mentioned, No One Gets Out of Here Alive.
Oh, okay.
Which is a story of, you know, it was the title given to the story of Jim Morrison's life, and I don't remember the authors. But he was incredibly well-versed in all forms of philosophy and psychology, and he had hundreds of books. And what he would do is, you know, somebody come over to his place, and he'd turn his back, okay, say, pick a book, any book, and go to any chapter and start reading it. And they would do that, and he would tell them not only who wrote the book, but also the title of the book.
And what page it was from?
Well, not what page, but he could tell the book and the author from hundreds of books, and he never missed. Never missed. I mean, he had, like, an incredible intellect. His IQ was, like, 150 plus. And, you know, I don't know if people really give him credit for that because they don't know the whole story of Jim Morrison.
Well, he didn't stick around long enough to tell it and share the insights that he had. I mean, he popped out of here at 27. Kind of a shame.
Well, you know, I really ask people who are interested to read this book, No One Here Gets Out Alive, because I read it like 20 years ago, and then I picked it up 10 days ago, and I read it, put it down for a day, and then I read it again because it was just so fascinating. And, you know, He only lived to be, what, 27, 28?
27. He's famously one of the 27 club, like Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain. You know, these guys, they're like comets who shoot through the sky. And maybe it's because they feel so much. They feel so much pain that they can't endure being alive. I don't know. I can't imagine what it's like for folks.
I think that's point I got from the book. That's certainly part of it. You know, by 27, 28, when he died, he had lived the life, you know, 10 people together would not have lived. I mean, he experienced life from every angle, you know, full on, full tilt, and you know, didn't stop to take any prisoners. And he was really, by the time he went, he was ready to go.
Well, yeah, no, it clearly, you know, people make choices, and he made choices, and so I think what he did was completely consistent with what he was about and what he wanted to do. But gosh, what a shame. Earlier, one of the callers said something, it was like a version of Stop and Smell the Roses, but it was more beautiful and evocative. It was something like, take joy as it passes by you, or something to that effect. You know, there's a lot of pain and suffering in the world, but there's also so much beauty and joy and mystery. And sometimes I get down, but gosh, what's going to happen tomorrow? You know, if you OD on barbiturates tonight, you're never going to find out. So No One Gets Out of Here Alive, the book that you're talking about, which is a biography of Jim Morrison. I pulled it up here. I didn't know this myself, but it's by Jerry Hopkins and Danny Sugarman. And tell us a little bit more about the book.
It's an amazing book, just amazing. I mean, it starts, you know, when he was in on the way from Santa Fe to Albuquerque as a child. You know, his dad was a commander at one point in his life of the whole Pacific Fleet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's that's the highest ranking military officer in America.
Yeah. And Jim was expected to live up to his father's ideals, and he did as long as he could.
Well, I think he went on a different path.
Yeah, he did go on a different path, but he went to the top of his chosen field also.
He did.
I mean, the Doors were accepted in England, just like the Beatles were in America. I mean, they were just nuts about the Doors. And, you know, in their time, you know, the Doors played hundreds and hundreds of amazing concerts. And, you know, a few didn't quite make it. Well, Tina B was telling me about one a week or so ago that she went to in the Forum in L.A.
Uh-huh.
And this was, you know, packed house, the Doors. But first on was Jerry Lee Lewis. You know, the king, the incredible piano player, Jerry Lee Lewis. And after 45 minutes, they booed Jerry Lee off.
Oh, that's stage. There's no call for that.
Yeah, and he said, I'm still the king, you know, as he walked off the stage. I'm still the king, you know. So Jim and the Doors come out, right? And the band, you know, three guys, Jim was mostly just a singer. You know, the band started playing, and Jim had this cup of water, and he'd occasionally, you know, take a sip out of it and go spit at the crowd.
Yeah, it's very attractive behavior, huh?
Well, no, it wasn't. So what happens is as the concert goes on, and the Doors are going through their whole repertoire, but he's not singing a single note.
Oh, he's refusing to sing.
He's just not singing, because Jim was also a shaman. You know, he didn't want people to just come to his concert because it was the Doors. And he wasn't really into being a big star. He said it was, you know, after a while, it was just a total drag. But, you know, he really did not come on to people who were coming on to him. He just avoided people like that because he didn't feel they were real. And, of course, they probably weren't. But, you know, he's doing this performance, and the Doors are going through the whole repertoire. And then he starts, you know, he has a cup down by his crotch, and he started pretending like he was pissing on a crowd, which, of course, is even worse than what we just talked about. So, you know, and you know, the point being, this was Jim, you know, going downhill. I mean, when he first came out, everybody considered him to be like a god. I mean, he was criminally handsome.
Yeah, he was a sexy SOB for sure.
Yeah. So what happens then is, 2 hours go by, he hasn't sung a single song. The Doors have played all the songs. And then, you know, he left the stage, and of course the crowd booed and, you know, whatever, you know, they were totally dissatisfied. But, you know, I thought, well, gee, that's kind of terrible behavior. Maybe he wasn't such a great guy. But then I thought about it. Here's this crowd. They came, you know, to be entertained. And Jim didn't like that. He was about people having experience, you know, dance. If everybody would just ignored him and got up in their seat and just danced for 2 hours, he'd have been totally ecstatic. But, no, they planned this concert at the Forum, you know, 20,000 people. And what's happening is, you know, the King came on. You know, without Jerry Lee Lewis, there's no Doors. You know, without Elvis and Little Richard and, Johnny Cash, you can name, a dozen people. There's no Doors because rock is an evolution.
Sure. Sure. So, we all inspire each other. That's the whole point.
Yeah, the leading edge of thought, as Abraham calls it. Abraham, the, channeled source of...
Oh, okay.
Esther,
sometimes
Esther and,
sometimes that guy sends me emails.
Well, aren't you the lucky one?
I am so blessed.
So I just want to finish that, Jonathan.
Sure.
So, I mean, I realized that Jim was teaching this crowd a lesson. Hey, you know, if you want to boo off, you know, Jerry Lee Lewis, the King, you know, who really helped make rock and roll, boo him off just so you can hear me, you know, and you're going to hear me anyway. But, you know, here's the point. You don't boo off the King of rock and roll, you know, somebody who was close friends of Elvis and, you know, Johnny Cash and Christopherson. And, you know, you can go on and on, even Jerry Lee Lewis's entourage. But it's like, you know, it was a lesson. These people got a $6.50 lesson. And that was, you know, you don't boo the King of rock and roll off the stage so you can hear the Doors. Because, I mean, if it weren't for the King, we wouldn't be here. And so what Jimmy was really doing, in my opinion, was he was honoring the King.
So in a way, he was demonstrating his perception of the crowd's disrespect.
Yes.
And putting it back in their face. Yeah, interesting.
Exactly.
Interesting. It's interesting that you bring this up, because the Doors, the name of the band, comes from the book by Aldous Huxley, who we read earlier today, The Doors of Perception, which perhaps you could explain what they meant by that.
Well, you know, Huxley's book was, I don't know. I think he had done LSD.
Yeah, he did a lot of things.
Yeah. And Morrison did LSD, he said, 250 times in his lifetime.
He might be exaggerating.
Well, you know, the band would say to him, Jim, you know, we'll trip once a week, but, you know, you're doing it every day. You know, at one point they said. So, I mean, Jim didn't have any limits, and that was unfortunate.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he was a notorious alcoholic, and he was just a full-on player. And, you know, they go to a hotel, and before you know it, he'd be, you know, drunk, hanging from the balcony, hanging from a rail from the balcony up, you know, 10 or 20 floors. And you know, the people down below are just going nuts. I mean, this was just Jim. And later on in life, somebody asked him, why'd you do that? And he said, because I had to do it.
Because I could.
Well, because that's who I am. That's who I am. He saw himself as being someone who didn't want to be restricted, you know. And the Doors of Perception, you know, he wanted to take people to the other side of the door, which is, you know, seeing life without all the restrictions that we place upon it.
Yeah, the ancient term for that is, and this is a great word, I love it, it's a psychopomp. Are you familiar with that?
No, but I like the word.
Psychopomp. It's from the Greek. A psychopomp is a guide whose primary function is to escort souls into the afterlife, but they can also serve as guides through the various transitions of life. The term comes from the Greek words pompos, meaning conductor or guide, and psyche, meaning breath, life, soul, or mind. So many people consider Jim Morrison to be a psychopomp.
Well, that's what I got from the book. I mean, what he wanted to be more than anything was a shaman. And
it's not an easy path, though.
Huh?
It's not an easy path.
No, and he only lived to be 28. But I would argue, you know, having read the book twice in the last 2 weeks, that he accomplished what he came here to do. I mean, he made film, movies. People wanted to make movies of him, but he always felt that they were trying to just use him, you know, a star, to promote their movie, and he didn't want any part of it. But he wrote scripts. He made movies. You know, he was an incredible poet, and most of the Doors songs are his poems, except for the ones that Robbie did, you know, and the guitar player. And I saw him about 15 years ago in a concert at Indian Casino in New Mexico, and he was amazing, Robbie Krieger. Just amazing musician. And, I mean, these guys were so tight because, you know, they were, not only were they musicians who get tighter than most of us anyway, but they had done a lot of psychedelics together.
Yeah, they had done a lot of unloosening as well as tightening.
Yeah, and what was, well, I mean, that's what made the Grateful Dead so, does and did make the Dead so powerful. Is because, you know, they spent their formative times, you know, exploring alternate reality.
Sure.
You know, they went through those doors of perception that hopefully all of us get a chance to do in one form or another during our lifetime, and not just be restricted to what we were given or, you know, brought up to believe.
Well, you know, I think that's really a well-grounded encouragement. You got to be careful. You got to take precautions, but you can't be so safe all the time that you never take any risks. So
it's got to be
some kind of crazy balance, yeah.
It is, and that's a trick of life, is to balance, you know, the everyday with the transcendental. I mean, isn't that what we're all trying to do?
That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about pollution at Mahalipu. You know, why we don't need 2,000 cows out there. And, you know, and then we're trying to talk about, you know, French existentialism, which Jim knew to the T. And he went to Paris for the last year or two of his life. And he got to know some great French cinematographers, you know, personally. And I knew of his close friend, Agnes Varda, who was in French New Wave. And she was just an amazing person, and she was a close friend of Jim's, and she was one of the five people there when he, you know, for his funeral. But Jim knew Sartre and Camus and all the rest, Nietzsche and all the rest, intimately. I mean, he could quote. I mean, he would often quote in articles and interviews these existential philosophers verbatim. And he just had an incredible knowledge of knowledge, you know, incredible knowledge of just what comprises wisdom and the different, you know, theories that, you know, have been promulgated over the centuries to lead us up to today. And, you know, thank God there's new theories coming out all the time. And I think you and I talked about dark holes or black holes at one point. I mean, a black hole is powerful enough to compress some, and I got this out of National Geographic, powerful enough to compress something the size of Mount Everest to smaller than a grain of sand.
It's a crazy universe we live in.
It's just amazing. And if they have that power, then, of course, a black whole can propel matter to the other side of the universe, through wormholes. That's not impossible to conceive.
If you can conceive it, it probably can exist. So thanks so much for calling in and sharing that your experience with the book and telling those stories. That's awesome.
Thank you, Jonathan. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha.
Hanapepe Economic Alliance and the Garden Island Orchid Society present the Kauai Orchid and Art Festival and the Spring Fantasy Orchid Show on April 1st and 2nd, 2016 in Hanapepe Town. The festival features local art by Kauai artists, live music including Paula Fuga, crafts, food, and keiki activities. A listing of entertainers, schedules, and event locations is available at www.hanapepe.org. or 808-335-5944.
You've got to tune to the station that loves you, KKCR, Kauai Community Radio. And no matter where in the world you may be, St. Louis, Astoria, Funabashi, Japan, Kapa'a, Kailua Kona, Australia, oh my gosh, you got to tune to kkcr.org. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks so much for your support over the years. We're coming up with our pledge drive in a couple of weeks, maybe a month or so, and this is your opportunity. We do it twice a year to support the station that loves you. If you love the music that you hear from all of the volunteers, I don't know if everybody knows this. No. I'm certain that not everybody knows this, but this radio station is run by volunteers. Every single person who does a show, myself and everyone else, Dove, who'll be in 20 minutes, Slim, everyone, we're all volunteers. We do this because of the joy and the passion that other people have inspired in us, and we want to share these things with you. I've got a caller who's been patiently standing by. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Thank you, Jonathan. One thing about Jim Morrison was his exhibitionism.
A little bit, yeah.
My exhibitionism, that's what I said, in a concert in Miami. And that kind of turned me away from the Doors. Excuse me, Jim, why are you doing this? I don't care if you love fistfights and this and that and being whatever, whatever, but what he did in the concert in Miami was, I thought, very offensive.
Well, it doesn't matter how much Kierkegaard or Sartre that you've read. It still does not give you an excuse to make A.
To make A?
Yeah.
I don't know what you mean by A.
Oh, to make A. That's a pigeon expression. It means to make
an... Oh, it's an opinion.
Yeah. No, it's to make A, to make an ass out of yourself.
Oh, you use the word that you suggested that we don't use on the air talking to you?
It's within the bounds of conversation. It's towards the warning track.
Okay. My apologies if I was offensive by bringing up what you did in concert in Miami.
No, I was just agreeing with you. Just because you're a famous rock star, just because you've have all kinds of philosophical understandings, just because you write wonderful poetry, just because you're a gorgeous hunk of man, doesn't mean you get to make...
I'm laughing on this side of the phone.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you have an excuse, a free pass to make A, to make a...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now I understand. You weren't necessarily applying it to me.
No, God, no.
Oh, okay. Now I'm clear. I misunderstood you. I thought it was being applied to me.
Oh, gosh.
Jim actually applied it to himself.
There you have it.
Excuse my dogs for barking.
Oh, that's okay. Say aloha to your puppies.
All right, I will.
All right, aloha.
Okay, aloha.
And we've got another caller standing by. Thanks so much, caller. I love the sound of the radio.
Well, so do all of us. And I had to call back because, you know, you have to read this book. No one here gets out alive to realize what really happened in Jim's life. Because, you know, what the press did, the establishment press, you know, tried to demonize him. Not that he was a saint. He was not a saint.
He was not a saint. But they only did it for one reason.
Well, he didn't do it. That's the whole point.
No, no, I'm saying the press, they, you know, they try and make hay while the sun shines. They don't care about Jim Morrison or about Janis Joplin or about Albert Einstein. They just want to make money.
They want to sell newspapers or,
yeah. So
there's more advertising on the internet.
Yeah.
And there is,
They say in the news business, they say, if it bleeds, it leads. So it's like, you know, there's an explosion, if people got killed, they're going to tell you all about it because it inflames your passions, because it shocks you and you recoil and are attracted to it at the same time. It's like first person reportage on a slow motion train wreck.
Well, to answer this gentleman's reply, Jonathan, to this gentleman's assertion here, you know, they asked Jim about it later. And, of course, the whole trial and everything.
Oh, yeah, it was an obscenity trial, yeah?
Yeah. The whole trial is documented in this book we've talked about. And Jim later said, okay, you know, because what happened as soon as he supposedly exposed himself, the organ player, Ray Manzarek, went over and grabbed him and hauled him off the stage.
Isn't that ironic that that the organ player would come forward to, you know, escort Jim? That to me, those things are beautiful.
One organ player to another.
To another, exactly. Wow, touche, sir.
Well, wait. Let me just quickly clear this up. Jim later said, when they finally pressed him on the issue, what really happened in Miami, said, "Didn't you know I had briefs on?" And I, you know, when I pulled down my pants, it was only because I had briefs underneath. But in terms of him actually exposing himself, it never happened.
Hmm.
It was just a rumor, and it was sort of, to a certain extent, it was mass hypnosis.
I was going to say, sometimes you get so excited to see something, the facts don't matter.
Yeah, and you know, you can read in the book. I mean, when the jury trial happened, you know, the witnesses would say, "Well, I didn't really see it, but
that's,
you know,
because it didn't
I was
happen.
Told that
right.
This is what happened." Or, you know, I saw a movie of it afterwards, and, you know, that's what made up my mind. You know, these witnesses embarrassed the prosecution.
Can you imagine how that would roll out today if, you know, if that happened today? Because everyone have their cell phones and their cameras, and it'd be like they'd all have 360-degree view of nothing.
Right. I mean, I think if that happened today, you know, Jim would be vindicated because nobody could show him any proof that he'd actually, you know, he knew, and nobody could show any of us any proof that he actually did expose himself.
Right, but it is true that he was guilty of suggestively salacious behavior.
Well, who isn't?
I know, right?
who hasn't done that at one point or another?
No comment.
Thanks for allowing me to address this problem.
Oh.
This misconception.
No, that's wonderful. Thank you for calling back.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So normally at this time, after 5:30, my good friend Nihi Joe Asquith comes on, and we do a little show segment called What's for Dinner. So she's not here today. I didn't get the full scoop on why she couldn't come in. But I miss you, Nihi. I wish you were here right now. And in honor of you, we're going to play this song right here. There we go. There it is. Oh, got a call coming in. What's for dinner, folks? We're going to do a special abbreviated short version today. But What's for Dinner is a great little segment we do where you call in and you tell us what you got cooking, because it's getting close to dinner time here in this part of the world. And I don't know about you, but I'm getting hungry. So the number is 808-826-7771. What's for dinner? Tell us what you got cooking. Caller, you're on the air.
Aloha.
Aloha, caller. What you got cooking? What's for dinner at your place? What are you going to do for dinner tonight?
I'm Charlie Brown. I might open some cans tonight or go somewhere else out of my house. But I wanted to just talk about how to make wave energy.
Well, you know what? You know what? With all due respect, this is time for What's for Dinner. And if...
All right.
If you can explain how your device can make dinner, then it's inbounds.
Oh, well, okay. That's a stretch by making electricity to run the stove.
Okay. Well, then that's great. If you had this device and it were functioning right now, what would you cook for dinner?
I guess I would, I believe in slow cooking, so I guess I'd put a lot of compatible things into a pot and slow cook it.
Oh, okay, like maybe some black beans or some black-eyed peas or some rice, or what would you make? What would you cook up?
Well, it sounds like mini meals, but I guess I'd go along with the balancing the beans and corns and rices and potatoes and all kinds of onions.
There you go. There you go. Nobody doesn't love dinner.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Wait. Do you want to hear how to make the wave energy?
Oh, no. We'll do it another time. Right now, we're focused on food because everybody loves dinner, and it's getting close to dinner time.
Okay.
Yeah, call back
I'll
another
time.
All right. Aloha. And the phone lines are open again. What's for dinner? What you got cooking? What's on the stove? Share with us what you're going to have on the menu tonight. The phone lines are open. It's area code 808-826-7771. I don't know what I'm having for dinner. I'm pretty excited. I live with foodies. And if you don't know what foodies are, these are people who not only love food, because everybody loves food, but these are people who have amazing skill sets in preparing delectable dishes. So I have no idea what it's going to be, except it will 100% be freakingly delicious. 808-826-7771. We have just a few minutes before we're going to go to the county council report. This is your opportunity to call in to KKCR and share with us what you've got cooking.
What's for dinner?
Oh, and here's a caller. Aloha, caller. You're on the air. There you go.
Hi.
Hey, what you got cooking?
Well, I don't have anything cooking yet. I'm getting ready to go to the beach. And then I'm going to go home and I'm going to cook some dinner.
Well, what do you have in mind?
Well, I'm thinking we have a bunch of taro.
Oh, so, nice.
It's really cheap and easy to grow. So we've got a bunch of taro and then we've got all this frozen fish.
Oh, what kind of frozen fish?
Well, I'm not really proud of the frozen fish I have because my husband keeps buying this frozen flounder.
Do they come frozen? I mean, flounders come from, like, the north, so...
Yeah, it's an Alaskan flounder, I think. But really, really inexpensive. And unless you have a good friend that goes fishing on the island, fish is really expensive here, so...
Well, some of the fish here is so ono.
It is. It's so ono, and I wish so bad that we had some fresh fish.
And some of the fish here is so mahi-mahi.
But we're doing flounder taro cakes.
Oh, well, you know what? That sounds pretty good. You going to fry them up?
Yeah, I'm going to fry them up.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome possum. Well, that sounds awesomer than gossamer. Thanks so much for sharing what you got cooking. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Aloha.
Aloha. We have time for one more caller, and it could be you at 808-826-7771. That's area code 808-826-7771. Kahiko, Kahiko, Kahiko 1, 826-7771. We're going to be rounding things out and closing things down for this show. But hey, coming up next, and I just got the thumbs up from the man himself, it is Dove. So get ready to evolve. He never knows what he's going to play, just like I usually don't know what I'm going to say. But together, we are improvising our way through life. And that is a beautiful thing, especially if you're brave and willing to make mistakes, because that's how I learn. So wrapping things up, and we're going to go to this, just to let you know. Let's see. Hold on. Want to make sure that Pierce has his chance to say what he wants to say, because, you know, Pierce Bronson, right?
This is Pierce Brosnan. This is Pierce Brosnan. This, it is. It's me, KKCR, wishing you a great day.
Yeah, so have a great day. And we're going to go to the county council report. And then after that, you have an amazing evening of music coming your way with Dove and Evolve, Slim on his mystery train. And then the Commodore bringing it in past the midnight hour. You never know what he's going to play, but it's going to be some kind of crazy loco-moco mix. So thanks so much for listening to Out of the Box. I'll be back with you in 2 weeks. Next week is Jimmy, same time, same bat channel, 4 to 6 p.m. on KKCR, the station that loves you. Aloha, hui ho, and malama pono.
Aloha, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's a county council report for the week of March 28th. There will be a council committee meeting at 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday, March 30th. The meeting will be in the council chambers, and here are some highlights in the agenda. The Economic Development and Intergovernmental Relations Committee has a request from the Director of Economic Development for agenda time to present the Kakaha Host Community Benefit 2016 report. Also, the county attorney requests agenda time to provide an educational legal information session about the Hawaii State Judiciary's Environmental Court Program. The Budget and Finance Committee received communications from the Chief of Police requesting council approval of an unbudgeted purchase of a 48x20 mezzanine for an approximate cost of $80,000 and subsequent installation at the Kauai Police Department station in Lihue to address the need for additional space for evidence storage. $50,000 of the cost of the mezzanine will come from unexpended funds. And this was referred on March 23rd. The Chief of Police also requests council approval of an unbudgeted purchase of 15 newly marked Ford Explorer patrol vehicles at an estimated cost of $50,000 to $55,000 for each vehicle for a total of $750,000 to $825,000, using unexpended funds to keep the Kauai Police Department on track with their strategic vehicle replacement plan, which necessitates the purchase of 45 newly marked patrol vehicles over the next 3 years, with the understanding that no vehicles will be budgeted in fiscal year 2017, and this was also referred on March 23rd. This committee also has on their agenda Bill 2618 for an ordinance amending an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the County of Kauai for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, revising the amounts estimated in the general fund, and this is a Deputy County Attorney Kauai Police Department legal support, in the amount of $30,933, and a public hearing was held on this on March 23rd. For more information, please visit the county's website. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha.
Hey, aloha. Wow, I just have to comment here. An unbudgeted expenditure of $55,000 per cop car and 15 cops. That's like almost $1.5 million. Unbudgeted. Wow. You know what? I think it's time to evolve.